Thursday's Richie Allen Show. And we've connected with Tony Gosling, top man, the presenter of the politics show at BCFM, former BBC journalist, terrific writer as well, and probably the doyen of all things Bilderberg research, I would say anyway. Tony, welcome back to the programme. How are you?
Trying to keep Bristol sane still, Richie. And I think we're managing just about to keep on top of most of these world events and, you know, local and national events. I mean, there's so much nonsense coming out of the press nowadays. And what really irritates me is even the sort of questions a child would ask, like, why are the pictures of these two so-called Russian super spies who came all the way across from Moscow and failed to kill their target person with a nerve agent and then went back again? How come the pictures are both exactly the same second in the same place? How can the Russians both be in the same place at the same time? It looks to me immediately as if it's a rather a poor forgery of a CCTV timestamp.
Some of the stuff that I've heard in the last couple, I only came back to work on Monday, and trying to get back into it after a few weeks away, as you well know, is not always easy. And no. I was trying to figure out what was happening. I want you to explain in more detail, as if people have never heard before, about the CCTV in a second. Am I to understand, and I'm asking this seriously, this is not a setup, I genuinely am asking this, am I to understand that the British government want us to believe that these guys sprayed Novichok out of a perfume bottle onto a door handle, then chucked away the bottle? And am I to understand then that we're supposed to believe that a poor unfortunate couple or a man found the bottle, gave it to his wife, and she's now dead? Is that actually what we're supposed to believe, Tony?
Yeah.
And it's, no
we're
way!
we're supposed to believe that the perfume bottle that had already been used, somehow, I imagine there must be fairies in the parks in Salisbury, but they magicked the bottle back into its sealed container, sealed in cellophane as well. So the people who were the victims of the second round of attacks by, so-called attacks by Novichok in Amesbury, testified that the bottle, perfume bottle, was all wrapped, and it was, and they had to open it. It was sealed, a sealed, you know, new bottle. So there are all sorts of anomalies. I mean, not least of which is, why did it take something like an hour and a half for this deadly nerve agent, just a few grams of which you get on your skin, kills you within a few minutes, for it to start acting? And then when it did start acting, it didn't actually kill the people it was supposed to be killing. This, I think, is part of a much bigger game, and it's a similar sort of load of nonsense than we've been sold on the 7/7 attacks, the 9/11 attacks, and all this kind of stuff. So I think we're just being sold a pup. And the main object, it seems to me, is not to catch criminals who are running around with nerve agents in Britain. It's actually to expel Russian diplomats, to reduce the possibility of diplomatic solutions to what looks like a war stoking up in the Middle East.
I did something a little bit disrespectful a second ago. I should have mentioned the lady by name. Dawn Sturgis is the lady that died. I don't mean to be disrespectful. It just occurred to me I should have named her. Her name is Dawn Sturgis, of course. It's alleged that her friend Charlie Rowley gave her a bottle and it was contaminated. Now, whether she died that way or another way, of course, is up for debate, and everything is up for debate. Tony, let me ask you this. You'll be aware that Charlie Rowley, you see, your work on the 7th of July, along with one or two others, was very instrumental in me when I was living in Spain, deciding to make programmes like this. And you know this to be true. I'm not, blowing smoke at you. That's a fact. Tony's work on, you know, throwing up all the inconsistencies in the 7/7 story. I understand that a friend of Charlie Rowley's is saying that he's fighting for his life with meningitis, and that he's lost the use of his legs and he can't see. I don't know how true any of that is, but if that is true, there will be people who will say, well, Charlie Rowley will know the truth about, will have some truth about the reality of all of this, and maybe somebody's trying to shut him up. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, quite feasible, because the Skripals can't talk. I would imagine that that's part of their MI6 contract. They will be told that, you know, you're working for British intelligence. You can't just go wandering into TV studios and chit-chat. because we can't be sure what you'll say, especially on a live program. So I think basically Charlie and Dawn are really unwitting victims of this whole business. It looks to me as if it doesn't look as if the sort of symptoms that Charlie and Dawn and Dawn died of have anything really much to do with Novichok. It looks to me much more like some other kind of, you know, problem. Obviously, we've heard the meningitis, but also there's this fentanyl which was going around. We were told in the, I think it was the Swindon Advertiser or the Wiltshire Times, the beginning of the month when this second Amesbury attack happened, there was a warning from the local police, Wiltshire police, that fentanyl was going around. Now, fentanyl is this particularly toxic form of artificial man-made heroin, which is extremely dangerous and much more powerful than ordinary heroin, and often kills people when dealers are giving them fentanyl instead of proper heroin. And so there was a warning went around before that. Now, we do know, we haven't been given exact details, but we do know that both Charlie and Dawn were users of these hard drugs, and so it might just simply be that they've had a batch of this stuff. Now, I did notice as well, it took 3 days after they were taken ill for it to be announced that it was anything whatsoever to do with Novichok. And so, and that was after the anti-terror police had come down from London to intervene and to explain that, oh, this is, you know, this is a very serious nerve agent incident, and to link it to the previous Skripal attack. I mean, I just think it's a pack of lies, the whole thing, I'm afraid, and none of it actually sits in any way for me as something which is believable. There's a lot that doesn't make sense, and it's great to see also that some of the BBC, I think it was Daniel Sanford at the press conference yesterday, actually also asking some very awkward questions, which they couldn't answer. You know, occasionally the journalists actually do their job, and he's done a fantastic job by actually asking. He wants the details, which is what all journalists should want. Like, what visa did these people come into the country for? There's two of them, Alexander Petrov and Ruslan Boshirov. And who are they? Are they actually working for the Russian GRU, the military intelligence? And if you think that they are, then how do you know that they are, and why are they, and how do you get this information? But more importantly, you must know how they entered the country, what visas they've entered the country on, so how long possibly they were here, which all might help other people around the country trace, you know, where they were at any one time, and give eyewitness statements. I saw them, you know, preparing the Novichok somewhere, maybe. I mean, they may have done it somewhere in public, who knows? But I mean, there's just no detail, and it's good to see at least a few journalists asking a few questions, which the police then sort of roll their eyes and say, ah, well, we haven't thought up that one yet, so we better come up with an excuse.
That's right, and of course, you're right, it is good to see those questions. The problem is, they don't get a chance to ask follow-up questions, and at a later press conference in a few days' time, they'll be ignored, those journalists, and they won't be allowed. Oh, by the way, do you remember that question I asked you 3 days ago? Have you got an answer now? Tony Gosling is our guest. Tony, watch this. They put out images of people going through passport control, and one of them seems to show something impossible happening. You alluded to this a few minutes ago, where two people are going through the same passport control thing at exactly the same time simultaneously. Tell us about this, because this is beyond bizarre.
Well, what the authorities are saying was that they were going through two different photo identification booths at exactly the same second. So that it's not, they haven't faked these numbers, that actually they were going through, and it just so happens that it was at the same second that they were in two separate booths. But it does look like the same one. I know who the chap that pointed this out, Craig Murray, former Uzbekistan ambassador, who was there for the final dismantling of the Russian version of Porton Down, and something we've always got to just keep banging on about. The obvious source for this Novichok, if it Novichok it is Porton Down. It's 3 or 4 miles away from the scene of both of these so-called crimes, and we know that, and I've heard basically from an army source, that it would be extremely surprising if they did not have manufactured small quantities of Novichok at Porton Down, because they use this for comparison, for identification, and that sort of thing. So maybe the police should simply be able to, or forensics should just simply be able to go into Porton Down, have a good old look around, see what Novichok they've got there, and see if the stuff that the police, anti-terror police have found on this door handle matches the chemical signature of the stuff in Porton Down, which it might well do, just a few minutes down the road.
Very good point.
And the other thing which links the two is that we know that Dawn Sturgis and Charlie Rowley's family were working for the military. That means probably Boscombe Down or Porton Down, around the Salisbury area. So it could even be that close. You know, one of the family members could have been involved in all of this. All I'm saying is I don't believe a word of the Russian connection. And I suppose there is an outside chance that it might just possibly be the Russians. If so, they have done something they've never done before, which is to act in the most incredibly incompetent. Not only did they send these guys in to do this assassination, so-called assassination of somebody that was of absolutely no use whatsoever to the British intelligence anymore. He'd been a long time over here, and there would be no information that he could possibly pass to the British intelligence services that might be of any use whatsoever in any kind of diplomatic or military conflict with the Russians. So he was a completely pointless person to assassinate. So number one, they sent these people over apparently to kill someone that there was absolutely no point in killing. And secondly, there is this whole background to this, which is the increasing tension with the Russians in Syria. As we're in a situation now where Idlib is about to be finally liberated by the Russians and the Syrian army. And this means that the US, UK, French attempt to overthrow Assad has now finally hit the buffers and totally failed. So they're looking, I think, to do anything they can to punish the Russians for beating them in the field, and they've been doing it in this rather cowardly fashion through the press and through manufacturing lies against the Russian government and expelling diplomats.
Absolutely, the timing is very, very interesting as well with the Russians launching air raids against jihadist positions on Monday, and then this comes out. That's a very good point. Let me just read out about two or three tweets. Unsurprisingly, we're getting a lot of tweets. We do, usually when you're on, Tony. Derek tweets, none of this Novichok stuff makes any sense at all. It's to ramp up the drums of war. The Western NATO countries are nothing but warmongers. What will it be like in 5-10 years from now if this is allowed to go on? Just before you come back on that, let me read a couple of others because they're running away from me. Moinga tweets, when the government tries to give a new Novichok theory, it basically collapses within a few minutes or a few hours of
That's
the theory
right.
being put
Absolutely
out there.
Absolutely right. Yeah,
within
these
minutes.
Things don't stand any test at all.
Ricky tweets, maybe it's the finding of Mossad agents, just throwing it out there. Well, it's easy to blame Israel for everything. Maybe blame Israel for tripping over a banana skin. But fair enough, I take the comment. Bob tweets, Bob Stew, if Russian assassins are sent to kill a target, they usually get the job done. I call bullshit all over this poisoning story. Very good point there about where will we be in 5 or 10 years if this stuff is allowed to go unchecked. By stuff we mean if the government is allowed to continually bring us to the brink of very serious conflict with world superpowers by inventing stories, by increasing tensions. If it carries on and on and on and we don't do anything about it, where are we going to be in 5 or 10 years?
Well, a mincemeat, basically. Look, there's another thing as well, and there is the staging of this press conference. Of course, this is also on the first day of the opening of Parliament here in Britain. So it becomes a sort of massive event where Theresa May does a statement to Parliament. Of course, she does it after Prime Minister's questions, so that there's no chance for any of the opposition MPs to cross-examine her at Prime Minister's questions. They've got to wait a whole nother week before there's any opportunity to do that. And the timing of it is laughable, really. I think it just shows what a limp, pathetic government we've got. I mean, let's just take a step back for a second, because Theresa May was never elected, not even by the Conservative Party, to be Conservative leader. She stood against Andrea Leadsom, and Andrea Leadsom just fell on her sword before the time of the leadership election, and so Theresa May had got a bye, basically. The other thing is, of course, we had the election last year which Theresa May lost, and then she's had to go to the DUP to get a few MPs in order to just about, you know, hang on to a majority with her fingernails. It's not a majority, it's a minority, but she's just about hanging in there. These people have no credibility. This is the other thing. I don't think, for me, the ability of Theresa May to deal with fast-moving situations, to explain herself in any kind of credible way, is nowhere. And Jeremy Corbyn, I think, did an excellent job at Prime Minister's Questions yesterday in pulling her up on, okay, so what have you done to try to get to the bottom of this with alongside the Russians? It's obvious they have no interest in working with the Russians. If they wanted to get to the bottom of what happened in Salisbury and Amesbury, then they would want to do that. But they don't want to do that. And that's actually the point.
You made a very good point, Tony. Sorry to interrupt you. You made a very good point a minute ago. The point you made about investigators getting access to Porton Down to A, confirm they have samples of Novichok, which they should do, and B, to confirm if those match the samples that were recovered in Salisbury. Now, the Russians, whatever anybody thinks about the Russians or doesn't think, they're entitled to that. They're entitled to say, well, look, we should do that. That's a very good point there. I want to talk more about Corbyn.
It would be interesting, wouldn't it? If say, for example, the Home Office or MI5, who's really this is their territory, had gone to the Russians, to the Russian embassy, and said, look, this is a mystery to us. This is a mystery to us. Can you help? It would be interesting. Now, would the Russians ignore them? Well, I doubt it. But if they did, that would also make it, you know, be more evidence that it actually might be the Russians, because they were feeling guilty and they didn't want to help. But they haven't even bothered to do that, to try to see if there can be any kind of cooperation between the two countries in getting to the bottom of this. The British have made it absolutely clear that they've already decided that the Russians are guilty, even though there is actually no evidence whatsoever, apart from these photographs of two people who haven't even been properly identified with their proper names, it seems, or visas or passport numbers given, that sort of thing, so that the whole world would know who may have those guys on their passport systems, that the British are not lying about who is supposedly done this.
Check out Bilderberg.org, Tony Gosling. Tony's going to stay with me for another 15 minutes. We're tight today. We're not ordinarily. We're loose. I know Tony's got plenty to do as well. We're tight. We can only stay to the top of the hour. I want to change tack slightly. Bilderberg.org, BCFM, the politics show. I'll tweet out the links to it. You know all about it anyway. Many of our listeners catch the politics show with Tony Gosling. Tony, the capitulation, at least I'm categorising it, or I'm labelling it, a capitulation by the leader of the opposition, Jeremy Corbyn, to the Zionist lobby in the UK. Do you think it was a capitulation to adopt the IHRA, as it's called, the IHRA, the Holocaust Remembrance Association, their legal, alleged legal definition of what it is to be anti-Semitic? I kind of predicted that Corbyn would collapse. I believe he has done. Maybe you'll give us a different point of view. What do you think?
Well, the politicians and the commentators in Israel do quite regularly compare other politicians to Nazis. And yet it seems that if anyone in other parts of the world does that, then they've got to be anti-Semitic. No, look, this is just an attempt to shut debate down about what's going on over in Israel and Palestine. We had last week Benjamin Netanyahu standing outside his nuclear facilities where he makes nuclear weapons, threatening to nuke Iran. That was just last week. And the unbelievable lack of coverage of those comments made by the Israeli Prime Minister shows you everything, really. The Israelis have got an exceptionalism in this country. They have an absolute buy when it comes to any kind of criticism. And it's only when they do something utterly atrocious and utterly appalling, and they do it openly and they admit to it, and they can't wriggle out of it, that there is any coverage whatsoever. This is also, I think, linked to the obsessive fanaticist nature of Christian Zionism, where there are quite a lot of Christians out there, not just Jews. I mean, in fact, most Jews wouldn't agree with it, but there are a lot of Christians in the United States particularly who believe that Netanyahu is some kind of on some kind of mission from God, and there are various Bible verses which are quoted very selectively in order to make it look as if, for stupid people, that is what Netanyahu is. So that's where we are, is threats, amazingly. Threats, nuclear threats to attack Iran from Dimona, the nuclear facility, And almost no reporting whatsoever. So things are hotting up over in the Middle East. So it's almost as if, as Assad reclaims the parts of Syria, as of course he's quite entitled to do under international law, and invite anybody he wants into Syria to help him do that, including the Iranians, as it looks as if he gets his country back, so we see more and more nonsense coming from the other direction, and particularly against Corbyn.
So why did he acquiesce, Tony? Why has he behaved in the kind of a limp-fisted, for want of a better way of putting it? He's been kind of broken and mumbling and fumbling for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. Why didn't Jeremy Corbyn, with the enormous support that he has in the party,
because he wants to be seen to be bending over backwards to not be anti-Semitic. And of course this actually does play quite well with Jewish members of the Labour Party and Jewish people generally, who are maybe interested in siding with the Zionists on this. So, you know, he's doing everything he can. He's bending over backwards as much as he can. And so I think, you know, I can see why he's doing it. I wouldn't personally agree with it, like you. I think he's probably doing too much. And actually, every sign of weakness like that is just another excuse to attack him. But of course, people like Margaret Hodge, who've led this attack from within the Labour Party against Corbyn, and this is just recycling the old attacks from the last few years of trying to unseat Corbyn, all because of his support for the Palestinians, all because of his condemnation of Israel for the 2,000 or so dead and 5,000 injured and 30,000 made homeless during Operation Cast Lead back in 2008-2009. Corbyn was one of the main speakers at the rally against that in London, and he was absolutely condemning Israel, as of course any right-thinking person was in the world. But that was his crime, and as regards the Israel lobby, they have decided he's going to have to be removed. And let's not forget last year's program back in January on Al Jazeera, which showed that there was £1 million slush fund from the Israeli embassy for anyone that wanted to try and agitate against Corbyn and pro-Israeli within the Labour Party. This is money going into the Labour Party for any individual Labour member that wants to start some sort of group to bash Corbyn over the head because of his support of the Palestinians. There is a massive slush fund there. Now, MI5, if they were worth half a cent, which they're not, or half a penny, would be in there arresting those people for interfering in British politics. The Israelis were even saying that they were going to topple a government, that's a Tory, defence minister. So this has been almost ignored, the total interference by what they're trying to do, really, Richie, I think, is to bring about in Britain the same kind of control over politics that the Israel lobby has in the United States. And I don't honestly think that that's going to happen.
It's incredibly ironic that the Trump administration has been dealing for forever, really, it seems like forever anyway, with allegations of collusion between members of his campaign and the Russian government, while there's absolutely no real evidence that, I'm not saying there hasn't been manipulation, and we could talk about that all night long, but there's no real hardcore evidence that people working with him or him himself or his family were working with Russia. You have that on the one hand, and then you have the scenario you described, that Shai Massoud, that brilliant piece of journalism by Al Jazeera, which was ignored completely by the UK broadcast media anyway. I mean, if ever there was an example of interference, I mean, you summed it up brilliantly, why wouldn't MI5 be all over that? I mean, it's incredibly ironic that you get wall-to-wall coverage of Russia and the United States. This went on and is going on in this country. And apart from yourself, apart from this programme, one or two other programmes, one or two other websites, the UK media just does not want to know. Well, what will it do then, Tony? I mean, with the Checkers publication, or the Checkers plan for Theresa May's plans or her offer to the European Union for a deal collapsing because neither Brexiteers nor Remainers want it, I'm convinced that there will have to be an election early next year. If Corbyn, it's one of those, he'd almost have to commit career suicide or some sort of unprecedented political suicide not to at least enter government in a coalition with the Lib Dems. Is that how you see things going in the next 6 to 8 months?
Actually, I don't think so. No. I think we're looking at a Conservative Party that's just going to cling onto power like a limpet, and they're going to be staying as long as they can. I mean, you know, I think with the DUP and their links to the Orange Order, the Conservative Party, their links to Freemasonry and the establishment, we're looking at a really, really strong establishment party. You know, isn't it amazing to see the coverage that there's been of the Labour National Executive over the last few days making this decision about the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism, which of course is really just there to protect Israel from criticism, and it's actually a thought criminal's charter. You know, what they're trying to do is to make thought criticism of evil people who kill and murder for racist reasons. They're making criticism of that. They're trying to make it an expellable offence from British politics. They've already expelled Ken Livingstone, who's a potential leader of the Labour Party, former Mayor of London, and a long-time Labour, you know, very, very well-respected Labour guy, for simply stating a historic fact. And that he's been expelled. So they've actually, I think, they may smell blood having gotten rid of Livingstone. And so they're going for everything they possibly can. By the way, Margaret Hodges' daughter is, I believe her name is Alison, oh gosh, I'm not sure of her second name, but she's a senior editor at the BBC television. So she's one of the people who's making decisions about how this coverage takes place. And of course, Margaret Hodge is an extremely powerful and important figure on the Blairite Labour Party. So what we're getting is a gang mentality really forming, where you've got Blairites and Tories deciding on which direction the attack on Jeremy Corbyn is going to come on tonight's news.
Tony Gosling is our guest. Thanks for the tweet. Lots of tweets on this and, of course, on Novichok. So are you saying, Tony, that if you had to make a wager or a bet on it before Labour was to come to power, if there was any real danger of that the Zionists would do for Corbyn beforehand?
Well, almost certainly. I mean, I don't think that the Conservative Party at the moment is in a terrifically fragile position. There's a lot of people, ever since last year's knife edge election, been saying, oh, well, you know, there'll be a general election soon. And this is just wishful thinking. I'm afraid a lot of people are very into this. But I try and be as realistic as possible. I don't think we're looking at, in any way at an election soon. Theresa May's popularity is extremely low. She's made a total mess of Brexit. If there was another election, even with a new Conservative leader, I don't think that the Conservatives would stand much of a chance getting in. So why on earth would they call another election all the time they could do these dodgy deals with the DUP and hang on in there? It doesn't. I mean, I don't think their interest, Richie, is anything to do with what would be best for the country.
Of course not.
They're interested in how much they can cling on to power.
You're 100% right, Tom, but let me jump in. The reason I think an election is imminent is because I think the European Union, which today has been reported, Michel Barnier today has been reported to have said that they find interesting things in the Chequers plan. But I think ultimately the European Union doesn't want the Chequers plan. They want complete and utter capitulation by the UK government. And I think they'll let that clock run right down and down and down and down and down. And in the autumn and over Christmas and in the very, 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 very early January time, I think there's going to be huge movement for this second referendum. There's going to be all sorts of doomsday scenarios put on television and on radio about the possibility of crashing out without a deal. And I think by then, her position might become untenable. And that might lead then to the, you know, to her stepping down and to, I'm often wrong. Go ahead, Tony. I'm often wrong. Go on.
It might be a new leader, certainly. But as regards the general election, I doubt it. Sorry, just to go back a sec. It's Victor Lewis Smith, the comedian and writer, that tweeted. Here it is, a quote from the 20th of August. I just discovered that Lizzie Watson is her name. Lizzie Watson,
yeah.
Senior BBC news editor, is Margaret Hodges' daughter. This goes unreported. If she were Corbyn's second cousin twice removed, it would be front page news.
It certainly
great
would.
Point by Victor Lewis Smith. Absolutely brilliant. And of course, the idea is we're not supposed to know that there are these Zionist connections into the very top of the BBC. When I was working there, I saw these Zionists turning up who had no gifts, no talent for what they were doing, but they'd clearly been just given the job because of their political persuasion. That's what it seemed to me anyway, that you're someone that's going to be on side and whatever and do the right thing and pliable, and we're going to give you a job as a result. So that was what I was seeing when I was at the corporation in 1989-1990. I could see these people arriving and appearing in desks, and I was thinking, well, you know, you don't really seem to have any aptitude for this job. In fact, you're losing us listeners, that sort of thing, for one of the senior producers, for example, and yet the appointments continued, and that, I think, was, you know, I could see the beginning of the end of the corporation as an organization which was content with itself and actually fulfilling what it was supposed to be, that is, independent in its BBC charter.
Tony, great stuff. Remind our listeners, I saw the same thing happen in Irish media as well. Remind our listeners how to listen to the politics show on BCFM.
Yeah, well, we do cover as much as, but we do international stuff as well, Richie. So we did last week, for example, an interview, an exclusive interview with a guy called Joshua Wong, who at the age of 16 organised the umbrella protests over in Hong Kong, which brought 250,000 people out onto the streets, worried and nervous that there's an authoritarian regime was taking over where they wouldn't have any freedom of speech, that if they criticised anything to do with the government, as Hong Kong gets swallowed up by China, that they would be jailed for anything up to 6 months, laughing at the flag, this sort of thing, is a jail sentence of 6 months. So they are very, very nervous over there. And Joshua had a lot of interesting things to say about the resistance, actually. And it is resistance in Hong Kong to this, which I think the Chinese had better think twice before they try and impose anything on that city. Because even though it wasn't democratic when we were running it, at least we allowed freedom of speech. For goodness sake, the Chinese government have got no interest in that anymore.
No,
anyway, so
don't.
if you want to pick up on all this sort of stuff we do on the Fridays, that is thisweek.org.uk. Pretty simple. We've got a terrorism discussion forum, which is 911forum.org.uk, and the good old Bilderberg.org website. And I'm over to actually going to Holland, to the scene of the crime, the first Bilderberg meeting in a couple of weeks' time, to do a seminar in Oosterbeek about the origins of the Bilderberg and also about Operation Market Garden, which I think was a major factor in delaying the end of the war. And it's one of the reasons why the Bilderberg conferences started in exactly the same place as this battle took place back in 1954.
Sounds brilliant, Tony. Well, enjoy that. I look forward to speaking to you again real soon, and we'll tweet out links for those who might be new to the politics show. Thanks for coming on today, mate. Great stuff. Speak soon.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for inviting me. God bless. Thank you very much.
You too, buddy. Bye for now. Tony Gosling live on the line there from Bristol.